Good morning. We're on In Focus here, News Radio KMAN. And start a little late here, but better late than never. We've got General Perry Wiggins joining us here on In Focus. And welcome, sir. It's good to have you on the program again.
It's great to be on, Brandon. Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure to talk to you here and find out what's going on in the military world here. General Wiggins is the Executive Director of the Governor's Military Council. I know recently we heard from Fort Riley, I think it was last week, mentioning some soldiers being deployed to help with COVID vaccination distribution, and I thought that was kind of neat to see. A lot of them, it sounds like, shipped off to Florida.
Yeah, Miami particularly, I think, for the Fort Riley soldiers. But, you know, this is really a group of about 5,000 soldiers that the Department of Defense has tagged to support the FEMA and the immunization program that they have. And out of those 5,000 soldiers, there'll be up to 100 teams. And I think Fort Riley was one of the first initial. There's 17 teams that have been sent thus far. And so the remainder are standing by to see where they can assist with FEMA operations in the execution of immunizations throughout the country.
Now, what's the selection process? What is there a reason they sent them to Miami rather than other parts of the country, or even here locally in Kansas or Missouri?
Well, I think they have spots identified, Brandon, throughout the United States, and I think they're just trying to figure out where they're going to place them. You know, FEMA works as really support of local and state organizations. So when a state requests the support, FEMA basically provides that through an emergency support function. In this case, it's medical. And that's why you see active duty military being tapped, as well as National Guard, in support of this particular mission, because it takes a specific expertise really to put shots in arms. You want the right person doing that. And so in this particular case, the federal government doesn't come into a state unless requested. And so I would guess Florida and Governor DeSantis has requested this support or help. And that's why they particularly picked these particular states. And so I suspect that if other states want the support, they can request that through the federal government, particularly DHS, who will tap FEMA to then reach out and provide that support.
All right. Well, we've been hearing a lot about vaccines lately, and now there's a third vaccine that's out through Johnson & Johnson. I know Riley County here has done a very good job of, I think they've got several thousand people at least have the first dose. And what do you know what the status is out at Fort Riley as far as officials getting their vaccines and to soldiers and such?
I think Fort Riley is in good stead. You know, this is the first time we've introduced an immunization and given soldiers the opportunity to decline the vaccination. Normally in the past, like when I was in uniform, when we were required to get immunizations, you walked through a line and they just gave you the immunization. So it's hard to count right now, but I think Fort Riley is well on their way to immunizing all their soldiers out there. And I think that's highlighted in the fact that the commanding general has recently released or reduced some of the restriction or restrictive requirements on soldiers. And you see them now, they're out at restaurants. And I noticed that just my wife and I the other day driving down the roadway and going to eat at the restaurant ourselves, the amount of traffic that's on the roads. That's great to see. But I think Fort Riley is well ahead of our communities and getting the immunizations to our soldiers. And that's part in case because DA Sims out there, the commanding general, has a requirement for readiness that's been placed upon them. They got to be ready to get up and go at any point in time.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, you kind of think about it. It's hard not to reflect a little bit because most of us in our lifetime haven't seen you know, this mass immunization going on here of folks, of a population, really probably since the polio vaccine that I can think of historically. It's interesting. We're going to look back on this probably someday and just, you know, with some sense of maybe a little disbelief, I would think, that we were able to do this so quickly and so efficiently.
Yeah, you know, I applaud Operation Warp Speed, and you know, the Department of Defense was a big part of that, particularly the former commander of Army Material Command, Gus Berna. But, you know, when you think back to immunizations, like even the flu shots now that are being distributed at CVS and Walmart and those places, I think that's going to be the ultimate outcome of this particular immunization. But, you know, the only problem we have right now is the storage requirements. There are some significant storage requirements, keeping it below a certain temperature, that makes it difficult to keep this type of immunization on hand. So I think once we figure those things out, just like you talked about, the Johnson & Johnson shot is a one shot. Moderna and others are two shot series. So we're learning a lot. We're developing. And I think as it gets more refined, we will probably see this particular immunization, in my opinion, in a lot of these pharmacies and Walmart and other places where people will be able to get it more readily.
Again, we're speaking with General Perry Wiggins here, Executive Director of the Governor's Military Council. Do you know at what point, in terms of vaccines, that Fort Riley may start lifting restrictions on soldiers going places and restrictions on post?
Well, I think some of them have already been done. As I spoke a little bit earlier, you know, they're enabling soldiers now to go to restaurants. Used to be they could only have takeout only. Now they're able to go into a restaurant and sit down and have a meal. And that's what you see right now at Fort Riley, primarily because you got most of the formation on the installation and home. You're seeing a lot of traffic out and about in Manhattan and Junction City and the other surrounding communities. The only unit that we have up and out and deployed right now or in the process of deploying is the Aviation Brigade, which is heading over to Europe. So you're seeing a lot of those restrictions, Brandon, being relaxed right now. And, you know, Fort Riley will keep the pulse because, once again, they have a requirement and they don't want to be, you know, they don't want to be impact our communities. And so General Sims is very sensitive to what type of restrictions he relaxes and wants to stay in tune with the governor's program and what she has in place. So, you know, they've still got the mask, they still have the social distancing, all those things, and they still have restrictions on the size of groups that can gather together, both on the post and as well as off post. But you're starting to see some of the restrictions slighten up a little bit with regards to soldiers' freedoms.
As far as, you know, and here's another topic that we've been talking a lot about this week because it is Severe Weather Awareness Week. And you have a lot of soldiers out here in this part of the country that aren't necessarily from Kansas. This is probably a good educational opportunity for a lot of them who aren't familiar with the old Kansas tornado and severe weather.
Yeah, you know, I when I first came here, you know, everybody called this the tornado capital of the world, which, you know, I took that and did a little research, to be honest with you. And, you know, Kansas is not one of the top states for tornadoes. And it surprised me. I believe Texas has the most tornadoes in the United States. So soldiers come here, they hear that, they take note of that, and rightfully so, they're very weary of that. But, you know, a lot of them are manned with their cell phones now, and there's a great system out there that provides alerts to them, and their chain of command briefs them when they come in on where the storm shelters are, what the procedures are, accountability, and what they do in case of emergencies, not only with storms, but with other types of things that go on.
And it's a learning curve. I still have a lot of family in Idaho, and they're always surprised. Every time I visit them, I live out here in Kansas, and I've lived in the Midwest, honestly, for the better part of 20-plus years, and they always come back, well, you ever seen any tornadoes? And they always, we're scared of tornadoes. And, like, you know, I've never seen a tornado in my life. And I've been in many severe thunderstorms, but never anything like that.
Well, I'm always careful, like I said, to talk about weather because, you know, it always seems to boomerang. But, you know, unfortunately, I've seen tornadoes and the impacts of tornadoes. And you know, when they hit a community, they're devastating. And the same could be said for Fort Riley. But, you know, there's a lot of things on Fort Riley that recruits have to do to prepare for severe weather. And, you know, you look at the Marshall Army Airfield out there and that ramp, you know, you have $35 million helicopters sitting parked on the ramp. They got to do a lot of work to get those particular helicopters into the hangars, because even a moderate wind, in some cases, if the aircraft aren't tied down appropriately, can create severe damage. And then once again, that's not only costly, but it also affects readiness. So they have specific sensitive equipment out there that they need that alert ahead of time with regards to weather phenomena that might affect or impact the post. And they got to get that equipment put up, get it secured, and then they got to secure the personnel, which takes time. So they have a lot of systems out there. They have their own meteorologist that resides out there on Fort Riley and does weather. It's in the Air Force side of the house that resides there at Fort Riley. And that's very convenient for the commander and really making decisions with regards to weather.
Yeah. A lot of moving parts out there, and, you know, something we sometimes take for granted. And, you know, a lot of them soldiers sometimes are called out to help with the aftermath of storms too. I know that's been the case many times.
Yeah, you know, and once again, that's we go back to the national response framework. I discussed how FEMA, how the request comes from local and state and up to the federal government. You know, if we do have a disaster like that here in the local area, and I hope we never do, you know, these communities have mutual aid agreements, and there's immediate response authority. So, for example, if something happened outside the fence and a community leader needed immediate help for life-saving, those sort of things, they can request that from Fort Riley, and the commander can respond. He just has to go up through his chain of command, and within 72 hours, he can respond outside the wire, providing that support without that particular federal state request for federal support. Within that 72 hours, they work with the federal government in order to facilitate the support. So there is opportunities for the military installations, and there is some advantage to having that type of manpower and equipment close to your communities, because that commander can respond under immediate response authority to support communities.
Very good. We have a caller calling in with a question or a comment. Let's get to him now. Good morning. You're on In Focus.
Yes, and for that manpower, you know, with the vaccines that are coming through on the military program for the civilians, we're going to need National Guard here at the Manhattan Armory, but also statewide. They've closed down so many of the armories that we would need for tornadoes or floods, and now for this military vaccine for the civilians. Don't forget about that. Thank you.
No, thank you.
All right. Appreciate the call here. Just a couple minutes left here with General Wiggins. Anything else you want to get out to the public here this morning?
Yeah, you know, I kind of mentioned it when we were talking briefly. You know, I'd like to recognize the Desert Storm veterans. You know, a lot of them are probably pulling out their old albums and taking a look at themselves, you know, from 30 years ago. You know, it's hard to believe that particular event took place 30 years ago. We've got a lot of veterans here in the state of Kansas and in the local area that served as a part of Desert Storm. And I think, you know, we need to recognize them and their accomplishments and thank them for their service. So if you see somebody out there that has served in Desert Storm and Desert Shield or Desert Storm, make sure you just say thanks for your service, because this is the time frame, like I said, where everybody kind of reminisces and pulls out the old scrapbooks and reaches out to an old friend and gives them a call. So I just remind people that took place in 30 years ago, and it was an important time in this nation's history and in our military's history.
Yeah, there's a really neat local thing going on here with the Flint Hills Veterans Coalition. They're actually doing a little bit of a podcasting thing here, and they're talking to some soldiers who had some experiences with that. Have you been approached by them yet?
No, I haven't, you know, but they probably got a lot of people in line and in queue that probably can speak more eloquently than I. So, but, you know, I've been reached out by a couple of national organizations, and I'm actually going to get an opportunity to speak. But, you know, I was just a lowly company commander in an Apache company back in Desert Storm. And it resonated with me and throughout my 34 years of military service. It was an important milestone, as it is with a lot of people out there that are currently or just recently left the uniform service.
Well, we will continue to highlight that all throughout the year, and always appreciate getting a few minutes to chat here with General Wiggins. Thank you so much, and we'll talk again next month.
Thank you, Brandon. You have a great day and a great week.
All right. Same to you. That's going to wrap up our show here on this Thursday. Thanks to him, and thanks to our NBAF officials. If you missed any of this, we'll have it up shortly at newsradiokman.com. Coming up tomorrow, we've got Karen Hibbard from CVB. We're also gonna have a guest from Extension Office and some guests from the American Association of University Women to talk about International Women's Day coming up.
Our American Stories is on the other side of CBS News this morning. The Limbaugh Legacy, Dan Patrick, The Game, and we have K-State Volleyball on the way tonight on K-Man.